It's 5:06, and you're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickett will be back tomorrow. Coming up, a look at possible efforts to change Wisconsin's tax system. Governor Walker says we might be due for an overhaul. He pointed toward states with no income tax as a possible inspiration. First, a new report sets out to evaluate the overall health of Wisconsin and figure out differences by age, gender, ethnicity, and where we live. The overall grade is a B-, but behind that, there are a lot of details and a lot of people who are falling through the cracks in one way or another. Our guest is Karen Timberlake. She's director of the UW Population Health Institute, which issued the Health of Wisconsin Report Card for 2013. Karen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good evening.
Thanks for joining us. And I want to focus a lot of our time on the disparities you found in this report. But first, looking at the big picture, overall, are we seeing health improvement in Wisconsin from year to year?
You know, it's really hard to say. We at the Population Health Institute have produced this report card three times now. We did the first version in 2007, then again in 2010, and again in 2013. And for overall health, we as a state are kind of stuck at a B minus. So, you know, we're doing better than some states with some groups of our population in terms of how long and how well people are living. But as you pointed out in the introduction, health is not the same for everyone all across our state. Not everybody has the same opportunity to live a long, healthy life, and we're seeing some of those inequities really show up in the numbers. And so that disparities grade, which looks at the magnitude of the difference between the healthiest groups and the least healthy groups, is also kind of stuck at a D.
And you mentioned living longer and living healthy, and that's your two main measures in this study. You broke down by age and a number of other factors how many people are dying, right?
Right.
That's the easy number to understand. How did you measure how well and how healthy we are?
Right, absolutely. And, you know, certainly it's important to understand much more than just the two measures that we have looked at for purposes of this report card. But in the spirit of keeping it simple and giving people something to focus on, right, we chose to look at death rates, what we might call the ultimate performance measure. So how many people of different life stages are dying. And then, as you said, we also are looking at what's called self-reported unhealthy days. So what does that mean? Every year, the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta works with states to do a telephone survey of people, adults all across the country of various ages. They're asked many, many questions about their health and health habits, smoking, drinking, how much they eat, how much they exercise, all that sort of thing. But one of the questions that people are asked is, in the past 30 days, how many of those days did you feel either physically unhealthy or mentally unhealthy? And it's really important to note that it's important to ask both those questions, because certainly physical health has a direct relationship to people's ability to go to work, go to school, care for children, be contributing members of society. But we're increasingly coming to really understand the close connection between mental health and physical health, certainly mental health in its own right, but also people with chronic diseases, for example, often will experience higher levels of depression and other kinds of mentally unhealthy days. And so when we want to understand at a given moment in time how well are people feeling in terms of data that we can get nationally, this is the best measure that we have available.
Well, delving into the findings and breaking down among groups, one thing that really leapt out at me when you broke down infant mortality rates, incredibly a lot higher for African Americans in Wisconsin. Can you talk about the differences you found there?
Absolutely. And, you know, for people who have been working in health improvement and public health, this is unfortunately not a new finding. But what we find is that for communities with significant African American populations in our state, so mostly in the southeastern part of the state, African American babies are about 3.5 times more likely to die prior to their first birthday than are white babies or Hispanic babies or Asian babies or babies of other races. Unfortunately for Native Americans in our state, they would be a close second to those elevated rates of infant mortality. Some of the best work that's being done on disparities in birth outcomes nationally is really looking at what's called a life course perspective. So we tend to think, well, is this a problem of access to prenatal care? Is this a problem of access to healthcare services in general? And that's a part of the picture, but what the leading scientists in this field are really finding is that the history of discrimination that many groups of racial and ethnic minority groups have experienced in our country, in particular African Americans and Native Americans, we're finding that the accumulated effects of that discrimination really builds up as stress in all people, but certainly in women. And those of us who have ever been pregnant know that stress creates these elevated levels of hormones that can create various kinds of birth issues, both pregnancy and birth issues. And we believe that that's what we're seeing as far as an effect for African Americans in our state.
Wow. So that's, I mean, in a way, you're fighting a few centuries of history. How do you tackle that in a public health outreach program?
So there really is some excellent work being done in Milwaukee, Racine, Kenosha, Beloit, communities that really have come to terms with this challenge and understand. You know, Bevan Baker, the health commissioner in the city of Milwaukee, will say that if there were the same number of murders happening in Milwaukee as African-American infant deaths, it would be front-page news all the time. And yet, you know, this is a somewhat invisible problem to many people. So that's one of the reasons we do a report card like this, is to raise the visibility. But there really are some excellent programs being done to really build awareness in the African-American community, to work with community leaders, to work with faith communities, to work with healthcare providers and others, to really help people understand that thinking about a healthy birth starts with thinking about healthy children who may eventually become pregnant women who choose to have babies. And so we actually have to start thinking about healthy birth outcomes by thinking about healthy early childhood development and healthy, you know, girls and young women, and make sure that they are best prepared for those healthy birth outcomes.
Wow. So that's what you mean by life cycle. Don't wait until you've got a woman who's pregnant right now, and that's the time to start with services. You're saying you're preparing for that at age one.
And it turns out that this idea of really focusing on infants and young children to set them up for success is an important strategy, certainly for improving birth outcomes, but it's also an important strategy for closing other kinds of gaps that we see in health outcomes. So we know, for example, that educational attainment, levels of formal education, did you finish high school, did you have some college, did you finish college, et cetera, how much education people have is highly, highly related to both how healthy they are while they're alive and quite literally how long they live. So people, organizations, groups that are working on helping children start kindergarten ready to learn are in no small way helping to work on helping those children live longer and healthier lives.
Another thing, if I'm reading the study right, turning to children and young adults now, geographically, the worst death rates you saw there were in rural counties in Wisconsin. Do I have that right?
You do, right.
And why is that?
Mm-hmm. So as we looked overall at those rates of death, what we do find is, as you point out, we see greater challenges for children in our rural areas than we do in suburban communities or in other parts of the state. And there are many potential causes for that. Certainly, one may be some of the higher risk factors that may be associated with living in more rural areas. So, for example, it's well documented and known that there can be higher risks to children in farm environments. Farming can be a very potentially risky activity for everyone involved in it, as well as for kids. And you know, certainly there, we also would have to ask some questions about equal access to healthcare services and other kinds of preventive services that those kids might need. So the purpose of the report card is really to cause people to ask those kinds of questions and to cause people who, for example, are community leaders in rural communities to not be satisfied with a statewide picture and don't take our word for it. It's important to go and look at local data and really understand if the same evidence is there locally of some challenges for, in this case, you know, children and their health.
We're talking to Karen Timberlake, director of the UW Population Health Institute, about a new report card on health in Wisconsin and differences and disparities among groups. You can join in and answer the question she just asked. What do you think we could do to be healthier in your community, in your part of Wisconsin, among you and people like you? Do you work in a healthcare field or do some kind of healthcare outreach? Or are you part of one of the communities we're talking about, African American or Native American, in Milwaukee or southeastern Wisconsin, or in a rural area? What are the obstacles to healthy living in your community? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We continue our conversation now with Karen Timberlake with the UW Population Health Institute, talking about their new report card on health in our state and on disparities between different groups of people based on ethnicity, where we live, gender, that sort of thing. You can join in with your questions and tell us what is an obstacle to getting healthier, living longer, sweeter lives, as Zorba Pastor would say, in your community. Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll go to our callers now. We have Randy with us in Onalaska. Randy, hi.
Hello, how are you?
Good. What did you want to say about health here in Wisconsin?
To me, it seems like I work for the Social Security Administration, and we take a lot of disability claims from people. Well, we see that a lot of inactivity, which creates, people that have diabetes, whatever stage. And it just seems like if you offer a program that encourages not only just eating healthy, but also being not athletic, but physical fitness. However you can move or do that, I think that would empower people to be healthier.
Randy, thanks a lot for the call. And Karen, I know maybe I'm thinking of other reports that I was looking at from the Population Health Institute. That's one of the health behaviors that you try to track. How are we doing on activity and exercise here in Wisconsin?
Right. It's really a great point that how long and how well we live is influenced by many factors, and one of them certainly is, do we get any kind of regular exercise? And speaking of Dr. Pastor, I love his comment about, look, we're not asking you to fall in with the jogging lobby that says you have to buy a certain kind of shoes and, do a certain kind of exercise. And I know he's famous for saying the best kind of exercise for you is whatever you will do. And so really, really want to compliment him for giving such a strong message. So one of the things we look at in another report, as you mentioned, is the percent of adults in Wisconsin, in the U.S., and in the nation that participated in any physical activity in the past month. And in Wisconsin, looks like that number is around 78% or so. So there's, again, as with everything, sort of a good news and opportunity picture there. So about three quarters of us have participated in some kind of physical activity in the past month, but pretty close to a quarter of adults in Wisconsin, when they were asked this question, said no, they did no kind of physical activity. So that could be gardening, that could be going for a walk in the neighborhood. Again, can be things that are very, very simple. So it's really important both to think about our own, personal choices and how we can work a little bit more physical activity into our day, but also to think about the neighborhoods we live in, the communities where we have our jobs, and how walkable, how bikeable, how conducive are those physical environments to helping us get out and move around a little bit.
Right, because we can tell people exercise all day, but if they think, my neighborhood isn't safe for my kids to walk in because of traffic or crime, that's not a helpful recommendation.
Exactly right. It's much easier to be healthy when you live in a healthy place. And there are many things that make a community healthy. We've talked about one of them, which is the ability to move your body and get out and move around. Another is access to healthy food. And it's an interesting exercise to think about how far you have to walk or drive to get to a full-service grocery store. There are many parts of our cities and our state and our rural communities where it's a long way between full-service grocery stores with affordable, healthy food, and that, again, creates a challenge for people. We can give advice about eating healthy all day, but if there is no grocery store nearby with a good selection of fresh food with prices you can afford, it's going to be hard for you to do that.
Thanks for bringing up those issues, Randy. We'll go back to the phones now. We have Susan with us in Edgerton. Susan, hi.
Hi. I'm a registered nurse, and I work at a small critical access hospital. And some of the things that I think are barriers for our patients is the fact that we have no public transportation. And so a lot of our patients are unable to drive. They can't afford a car or because of their health issues, so there's no public transportation. There's also a limited number of specialists who are willing to come to a rural community. And so for those patients, again, if they don't drive, they have a limited budget. It's difficult for them to get to a bigger place, a bigger city, a bigger facility that has specialists. And the other thing is, again, with the poverty medications, they choose to take their medications not as prescribed so that they last longer, or they don't fill their prescriptions at all because of their income. So those are a couple of my comments from a small community. Thank you.
Susan, thanks for sharing your experience. And Karen, a lot of obstacles there in rural Wisconsin.
Right. No, that's really a great firsthand account. On the transportation point, you know, one thing to think about, back to the discussion about both physically unhealthy days and mentally unhealthy days, one of the things we know is that social connectedness, you know, just the ability to be with other people, to participate in activities, to go to a community center or a town meeting or whatever it is so important, particularly as people age and may retire, separate from the workplace, other things they used to do that gave them a sense of belonging. And so Susan paints a really compelling picture. In some parts of our state, it's very hard for people who don't have cars, don't drive, can't afford a car, whatever it is, to be able to be connected to other people just by, through the simple means of having access to transportation that can get them places. So there are certainly many communities in our state that are working hard on improving that transportation infrastructure, and we think of it as having a sort of economic rationale, which it certainly does, but it also has a health rationale.
Thanks a lot for the call, Susan. We go now to Cindy in Milwaukee. Cindy, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Cindy from Milwaukee calling. I'm a registered dietitian and very proud graduate of UW-Madison's Department of Nutritional Sciences. So my question today, or my comment really, is in regards to ice skating. And just yesterday I had an experience in calling a Milwaukee County park and checking into ice skating for a family party we're having this weekend. And I drove by it on Sunday, and it hadn't been shoveled, and there were signs all over, dangerous, thin ice. And I thought, oh, my goodness, we got a problem here. So I called the people, and they said, well, all the county parks, the ice skating rinks have dangerous thin ice on them. I said, that's ridiculous because it's been so cold. It's clearly okay. I think the issue really is more liability. But when you're talking about, you know, exercise, childhood obesity, safety, recall when we were kids, my goodness, we had 3 ice skating rinks right within walking distance of our home. And during the winter months particularly, kids are just so plugged in. They just don't have an opportunity to do things even after dark that are supervised and healthy. And I would like to see more funds or more concentrated effort on ice skating for kids in the wintertime and families in general. That's outside.
Thanks for the call, Cindy. So more public exercise opportunities like ice skating. You can go beyond that if you want, Karen.
Sure. You know, I think Cindy makes a great point, which is so much of health improvement can happen locally. So just to her example, if the neighborhood around a couple of those rinks got together, or parks, and got together and got organized, you know, that, and talked to their alder people, et cetera, that's the way those kinds of changes happen. And, sometimes it's overwhelming to think about health improvement at an entire statewide level. So again, we produce statewide data so that we have a record of how we're doing as a state. But really what we want is for people to take ownership and get motivated to work on these issues locally, because that's where we can see some real change happen.
Just about out of time, but as I understand it, there's a goal to eliminate the disparity among groups in Wisconsin by, is it 2020 already?
Well, so the Healthiest Wisconsin State Health Plan, right, every 10 years the state produces a health plan that looks at wanting everyone to live better and longer. And one of the overarching goals of that plan is really to close the gaps between those who are doing well in our state and those who aren't doing so well. And the thing we need to understand is that health really occurs along a continuum. All of us can have opportunities to live longer and healthier lives. So if we create the conditions that will help those who are struggling with their health do better, we really create the conditions for us all to do better. So in some ways, we all do better when we all do better. And that's really the message that we hope people will take away from this report.
Karen, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Karen Timberlake, director of the UW Population Health Institute, talking about their new report card on Wisconsin's health.